Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, Nick. Are you bored of drinking big fat shots of Director's Bitter and Ladyboy Chasers at home?
Tom, I ruddy bloody am. I'm hopping mad and just want some exciting craft beers to enjoy when I'm watching my Bond videos. That's not too much to ask, is it?
Well, have I got some good news for you. The fantastic chaps at Beer 52 have given us a special offer they'd like us to share with our listeners.
Can I just shock you? I like special offers. Do tell me more.
All you need to do is go to beer52.com/monkeytennis. Cover the postage cost of £5.95 and you'll be sent a box of 8 cracking craft beers, plus a magazine and 2 beer-appropriate snacks.
Wow, that is a real breath of fresh air. So you're telling me to get a free case of 8 unique craft beers from Beer 52, I just need to go to beer52.com/monkeytennis and cover the postage costs of £5.95?
Yep, it's literally that simple. It really is lovely stuff.
Oh, sometimes you want to say, sod all this wine, just give me 8 craft beers.
And I've really got to say this, Nick, Beer 52 is the world's largest beer club.
Mmm.
Yep, each month members are sent a case with a different theme. Past themes have included Belgium, Korea, California, New Zealand and many more.
But what if I don't like dark beers?
Ah, they've got that covered too. If you don't like dark beer, you can choose a light beer option. And you can pause or cancel at any time. Simply go to beer52.com/monkeytennis and just pay £5.95 postage to get all this now.
Crash, bang, wallop, what an offer. 8 free beers, a magazine and 2 snacks for less than £6 postage. Mine's not a pint, mine's a box of 8 craft beers. I'll drink to that.
I'm hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha! Yup, absolutely. Yup, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Bam!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on a spike.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay. Monkey tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzup of a guy.
Yes, 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 and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah. Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're kicking off Series 12 with a brand new feedback episode. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Do you know what this room says to me? Aqua, which is French for water.
Nick Alder.
Come on, baby girl. My motorcycling's important to me. You know that.
And Tom Stav.
It occurred to me, God, all-knowing, invisible, and all around us is identical to high-speed Wi-Fi.
We're about to delve into your messages, missives, corrections, and queries from the last few months. But firstly, just a recap of all the many ways you can get in touch with us or show your appreciation if you've been enjoying the podcast. We're on email, obviously. That's where you start. ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod, Twitter @ThePartridgePod, Instagram @MonkeyTennisPod. Crucially, the Partridge Pod was taken. Rude. You can drop us a note on the Monkey Tennis Hotline. Leave us a voice note on 07923 600 017. We do love to hear your voices. Or if you're enjoying what you've heard and you'd like to give back, as it were, then go to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis, where you can shout us £3, the price of a cup of coffee, or if you're feeling very generous, 15 quid, which is enough for all of us to be fully caffeinated humans. Finally, the other thing you can do, which we do like to mention, as does every podcaster, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, for those of you still stuck in the early 21st century. And kicking us off with some recent news, it's Mr. Tom Dark.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, it's probably worth a little chat about the recent day-to-day reunion that took place on Radio 4. So this was in mid-August. There is a series on Radio 4 called The Reunion, which is hosted by Kirsty Walk. And in that show, they reunite a group of people intimately involved in a moment of modern history. So that's correct. The day-to-day is obviously modern history. So you had Kirsty Walk with Armando Iannucci, Patrick Marber, David Schneider, Steve Coogan and Dean McKeegan. I'm going McKeegan because that's how Kirsty Walk said it. So basically you had the cast there talking about the day-to-day, which, as I'm sure we all know, was first broadcast January 1994, but coming off the back of the award-winning Radio 4 comedy On the Hour, which were first aired in 1991 and 1992. So obviously the impetus for this is all essentially you've got 30 years since the birth of Alan Partridge, but also On the Hour and the day-to-day and everything that followed. So I don't know if all four of us had a chance to listen to this.
I think the first thing to put out is that I just think it's a shame that old Chris Morris wasn't involved in some capacity, at least, you know, maybe on the, what would you call it, the reunion hotline.
He never...
So they could do a little voice note.
He never looks back, Tom. His head will not turn. He doesn't look back. He only looks forward.
Yeah, I guess also the other kind of key missing cast member was Rebecca Front as well. So it's a shame that he didn't have the full compliment. But yeah, I think Chris Morris in particular, he is kind of quite promotionally shy. But I thought this was a very fun listen. It was great to hear them all in the same room together. There was some great banter about the Oxbridge lot being Armando, Patrick and David, whereas Steve and Dune went to Manchester. I thought, yeah, they all genuinely sounded happy to be back in the same room together. A lot of laughter. And there are some great tidbits about the kind of gestation of the Partridge character. They talk about there was a Newsbeat presenter at the time called Frank Partridge that helped inspire the name. There's also some good banter between Coogan and Marber specifically. Coogan talks about Marber saying to him, Steve, you're more talented than me, but I'm cleverer than you. And he also talked about, Coogan said that Marber said to him, this character will change your life. And like I say, there's a lot of great insight into the early days and creation of the character. So much so that I think it's probably worth playing a little clip in for those that haven't heard it, just to give you a flavour of it.
In fact, I do remember Patrick ringing me up after the recording of Knowing Me, Knowing You, at the Paris studios. It was a call box, so it was definitely pre-mobile phone. And he said, that show you did tonight is going to change your life. And in 5 years' time, people will be shouting, aha, at you across the street. And I'm thinking, wow, that would be fantastic.
I think just one thing to pick out from that clip and from the show in general, is something that's come up relatively recently is how Coogan's voice is just naturally kind of, well, not naturally, he's not really putting on a Partridge voice anymore. He is, and maybe there's a slight change for it, but you listen to that clip and you go, that's basically what Alan sounds like now. He's not really putting, he may sort of like exaggerate it a little bit, but it is very, Coogan's actual voice is very close to Partridge.
I think
now,
the main difference you get is the ho-what and the ho-wens, and that's about it. The other note that I had specifically is that Patrick Marber sounds very, very keen on doing another series. So question to the group, would a second series of The Day Today actually work? Would you be interested in that?
I think enough's changed in, I mean, obviously, you. I think the default position is, well, the news is so overblown and ridiculous now, it parodies itself. Yeah. But I do think enough has changed in the 20 years in news coverage and how, you know, how people try and strike a balance by getting, you know, somebody who's correct and then an idiot that thinks the other thing. Mm. I feel like that enough has changed in news that there's a ripe, a new set of tropes to parody. So I think it could work. But I also think maybe it's better done by a younger group of people now rather than these guys going back to something that they did 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with that because I do feel like if there was a day-to-day series two, I think the expectation of what the audience would want from that would be quite specific, and it's probably not actually the right thing to do because, yeah, if it is just all about how graphics are overblown and stings go on for too long and how OTT the news is, that's like, yeah, like you say, that essentially is realistically how the news is now. What started off poking a bit of fun, it actually seems like it's gone more that way to the point where that's normality for news. And also, I guess it is that thing, and I think they probably talk about this in the reunion show as well, that in essence it is kind of like a sketch show because you do have all these random disparate kind of thoughts and very like surreal ideas popping up, but it's all kind of joined together by Chris Morris being the anchor in the newsroom, isn't it?
It's difficult because you would want it to be different enough so that it isn't just the same thing over and over, the same thing repeated. And I think people would have an issue with it if it was different, because we have seen the reaction to people, the reactions from people when Partridge has come back and they just want another series of I'm Alan Partridge, and they'll just like basically play the hits, Alan, that kind of thing. So they would kind of want this cast to reunite and play the hits. And if they did something completely different, it probably wouldn't go down particularly well. Now, obviously, the strength of those people from a creative standpoint is so top tier that I'm sure it would be very good. But I'm sure you would get the same people who are moaning that this time isn't I'm Alan Partridge Series 3, moaning that this the day-to-day isn't the same as it was back then.
Yeah, and, you know, I think certainly someone like Armando Iannucci and also David Schneider, like, you know, they haven't shied away from commenting on kind of news and kind of like developments that are kind of like the big news stories of the day. But, yeah, I feel like Adam says, it's the jokes would now be more about kind of like balance and fake news and things like that. So I think it would become a very different beast, which probably would then leave people feeling a bit disappointed, maybe.
Put it this way, I think if Iannucci doesn't want to do another series of The Thick of It, because that world has been transcended by the real world, he's definitely not going to want to do another The Day Today, is he?
We also had some correspondence from our listeners who had also listened to the show. So this was from Rachel Newman, who wrote, "Dear Fops, I'm sure you're ahead of me on this, but there are a couple of Partridge tits bits in the recent episode of Radio 4's The Reunion episode on The Day Today. So firstly, the presenter Kirsty Walk at one point refers to Partridge's upcoming project as your own TED Talk. How does this tally with what else we know about the project? Which I'm guessing is in reference, obviously, to Steve's or Alan's live show next year. Secondly, there's a bit when Steve Coogan and Dean McKeegan are describing the spoof radio plays they improvised, and it is pure Hannigan, which, as you'll remember, is from Mid Morning Matters, Series 2, Episode 1. Personally, I love the Hannigan piece. My God, you're busty. One of the key favourite lines. I would love to hear a version by the Day Today cast, and that is from Rachel, who describes herself as a female fan of Partridge.
For fop.
Indeed.
So I'm going to do a little bit of teasing now. Ooh, do you like that? Do you want me to move on to the other one?
not when you say it like that.
So obviously we're here recording feedback episodes, which implies that there is a series coming. And if you thought that there is a series coming, you would be right. But what is in that series? There is no new Partridge to cover. Well, given the fact that we are celebrating roughly 30 years of Alan Partridge, an incredible milestone. And what we've done is we've interviewed a load of well-known fans of Partridge, fops. So from the world of comedy, from the world of presenting and entertainment, a kind of broad spectrum of people who consider themselves to be fans of Partridge. We're not going to tell you who it is, but we promise we have recorded them, and over the next few weeks we will perhaps drop little tidbits, little clues on our socials of who we're going to have on the show that week. And we've taken it in turns as pairs to kind of interview some fans of Partridge. So what we hope is that it will be just a bit of fun.
If you're looking for the inside track on upcoming guests, then now would be a great time to follow us on social media. So it's facebook.com/thepartridgepod, at thepartridgepod on Twitter, or at monkeytennispod on Instagram. We'll be dropping some little breadcrumbs there ahead of every episode of this new series.
Basically, if you've seen what Off Menu do, we're stealing that idea.
So back to your feedback. We've got a couple of audio notes. Thank you very much to all of you that have called in the Monkey Tennis Hotline. We're going to start with Brian, who's got some thoughts about the ending of This Time with Alan Partridge.
Brian!
Hi, guys. Really enjoyed the series. I think you brought a lot of great insight to the second series of This Time that I never noticed before. But I just want to touch on the ending and the psychic Simon punch. I think that was definitely a deliberate choice with the whole Jeremy Clarkson BBC scandal of the last couple of years. I think it's pretty much drilled into the public consciousness that, you know, essentially attacking a workmate will get you fired. Who knew? But yeah, I think that was a deliberate choice purely based on the fact that there's a precedent set of a BBC presenter attacking somebody off camera and the repercussions that were found from it. So I think that this, along with the announcement of Stratagem, quite close to the last episode, I think that was also deliberate. I think that that is basically Alan's next venture. BBC, at least in English broadcasting, is the top of the pile. He's definitely gone. I think that was made very clear from the ending. I know you guys had said it was a damp squib, but I think it was very representative of the state of his career. He's barred from the BBC. He's not coming back, especially causing a bit of a fracas on a Royal episode. Definitely doesn't reflect very well on his career. So I think that Stratagem is basically going to be the next step. He's going to go into his own, you know, self-funded TED Talks to try and further his career. So I don't think it'll be the last we'll see of Alan Partridge on screen, but I think in terms of his career, Stratagem is not so much a further progression as much as a scrabbling for anything, really, I suppose. Anyway, thank you very much. Appreciate all the hard work you've done in research, and look forward to hearing the next episode.
Hard work and research. Has he even listened? thanks very much for getting in touch, Brian. I thought you made some very good points there, especially around the parallels between Clarkson and Partridge. I hadn't actually thought about how closely those two stories relate to one another. It also made me think, with Stratagem, if it is a scrabbling, I wonder if it's going to be one of those things that kind of is presented as Alan in control, you know, he's telling you how to live your life, but then gradually over the course of the show, the sort of the cracks begin to show, and it basically ends up being a man having a breakdown on stage. I thought that'd be quite an interesting concept, rather than it just being a kind of forward solution style beginning to end TED Talk, if it becomes more of a sort of unravelling of Partridge live in front of everyone's eyes.
Well, most things involving Alan end with him unravelling in front of our eyes, don't they? Having a breakdown.
I think that's a really good point. Obviously, we don't really know what it's going to be yet, but I think you're bang on that there's going to need to be some kind of narrative, you know, because it's going to be I'd hope for the amount of tickets cost, it's going to be roughly a 2-hour show at the least. So it needs to be more than just Alan doing his own version of a TED Talk, because that in itself only gets you so far, doesn't it, in terms of a live show, I think. And I thought it was interesting as well, Brian referring it to as a TED Talk on the call, and also Kirsty Walk referred to it as a TED Talk in the reunion as well. So I don't know whether that was perhaps in an article or something, whether Steve Coogan or one of the Gibbons brothers referred to it as a TED Talk style show, or whether that is just what people have picked up on from the teaser trailer that we've seen. But I would imagine it feels like it's going to be an extension of not only Forward Solutions, but also Lessons in Life Management, which was a section in a Coogan live show in the late 90s as well.
So plenty to look forward to with Stratagem. On to our next voice note. Thanks to John, who got in touch with A Tale of Two Queens.
Hello guys, it's John here from Hull.
And just on your last pod, you were talking about people who had seen royalty. Well, I've got a little nice little double one here. I in 1977, yeah, that's how old I am, I actually saw the Queen at Ellen Road at Leeds. We were all school kids and we went to see her and give her a quick wave. She run round, she drove round. And then in 1982, I saw Queen of the Band, also at Ellen Road. So it's a nice little double there. Ha ha!
I really enjoyed the ha ha there.
You're from Hull, John. You're from Hull. I mean, I don't have much to add to that. Just a nice, just a lovely, just put lovely story.
Yeah, it's John's funny story.
Moving on now to James, who is reporting live on location for us.
Greetings, monkey tennisers and podcast listener. I'm James, and I'm reporting to you from a rather pretty little permissive pathway, or indeed, now it looks like a public footpath, just south of the pretty village of Heatherset. Why am I here? Well, in Series 2, Episode 2 of This Time with Alan Partridge, there was rather a clear map where Alan was off out to buy trousers and came back home several times. And this is where the Oast House is on the map. It's a beautiful little area, just beyond the park and ride, so no having to deal with the riffraff, and indeed on the other side of the main road to Heatherset Village itself, so well away from the public gaze as well. It did raise me a little bit of a concern that there are Taylor Wimpey homes being planned or built along the way a little bit, but otherwise it's quite idyllic and beautiful. Now, tempted as I am to try the door of the Oast House, I would not say that it would a particularly good idea on my patrogramage without prior agreement from Alan, or at least from Lynn, for fear of being chased down the path and being accused of being a mentalist. But this is an idyllic place and very much suited to the location of the Oast House, and I would recommend that anybody who fancies popping by do so. Love the podcast, and looking forward to more. And I will send the location on a WhatsApp message. Bye for now.
What I like about that message from James is that it's quite in a sort of hushed, understated, quite reserved tone, almost as though he's recording it maybe from like a bush or behind a tree or something like that. Like he is actually snuck in and is kind of like peering around and looking in and maybe seeing some takeaway cartons, some walking boots. It sounded like maybe he had gone a little bit too far into someone else's property at that point. I don't know.
I was just going to say as well, I thought his sound recording quality was excellent. Also from a live location, the quality there really was breathtaking.
I felt like I was listening to a Radio 4 afternoon play.
Yeah, very Archers.
Yeah,
it
had a bit of actuality in the background, like cars passing by in the distance. So I think if I remember correctly, because he did send like a screen grab of where he was on the map and a photo of himself. So I'll try and dig those photos out and we can put them up on socials. But if I remember correctly, essentially he's just in the middle of a field. He's not actually on someone else's property, which in a way is a shame, but also probably for the best.
In summary, thank you, James. Do voice note again.
That is the gold standard of voice notes, I think. And I feel like it's probably, I don't know, this might be a very bad idea, but can we perhaps do an appeal to the listeners? Can anyone else report to us live on location from any Partridge-relevant locations? What do you think? Is that going to get us into some kind of legal trouble? Or is that
I think it's fine. Please do supply photographic evidence, because otherwise anyone could just call and say, I'm on the ring road, I'm going nowhere.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. So yeah, we'll only accept if there is also pictorial evidence alongside it. That seems fair.
Well, it's been rays of sunshine so far, but I'm here to darken the skies with some slightly troublesome commentary from our listeners. So this comes from JP235, and this is in relation to the story arcs of This Time. They write, "My only real criticism of This Time is that it seemed to set up story arcs and then not make much use of them. Early in Series 2, we had the stories of Alan's fears over the new producer and the rise and fall of the Jenny/Sam relationship, neither of which really proved very significant by the middle of the series. Later on, Alan's desperation to secure the Princess Anne interview and Simon's ambition to expand his role could have been built up more. I did really enjoy the series, but it felt more like a sketch show, where each segment would go wrong and then get forgotten. The segments with Matt Smith and Nick Mohammed, for example, just seem to stop dead, leading me to expect their characters to return later, which never happened.
We also had an email from Kyle Barrett, essentially echoing this kind of sentiment that they felt there were unfulfilled story arcs. So Kyle wrote, alongside you guys, I had been speculating on the possible machinations of Jenny and Tiff all series, and it goes to show how easily expectations can lead to disappointment. Overall, I enjoyed the second series this time and thought the finale was great. But it's cemented that the show is all about Alan. That may be unsurprising to say, but should the series have committed to more defined arcs for the supporting characters? Simon seemed to be getting more comfortable in his role and had expanded into hosting, but this goes nowhere. Jenny's relationship and subsequent breakup with Sam fizzled out and ultimately felt irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, although admittedly did lead to some funny scenes. And I guess there was nothing more to Tiff's character after all. The three of them do play roles in Alan's big moment in the finale, Tiff being the possible unleasher of the photos, Simon making the significant and regretful joke, and Jenny being the one to interview Princess Anne instead of Alan. Should the show have committed to giving them all character journeys rather than just being satellites for Alan's? Or am I putting too much unnecessary pressure and expectation on this show that is just meant to be a very funny Alan Partridge series, which it absolutely is? I can't help but feel there were some missed opportunities. I apologise for not working in a Partridge quote or joke in this email and instead writing something serious and incredibly dull about a comedy show. So, collective thoughts on that? Is it broad agreement?
I think we covered this around the kind of the story arcs, and I think that there is agreement that there isn't particularly defined story arcs and characters kind of don't really go anywhere. I mean, I think it's important to remember that it isn't a soap, obviously, and it's not a narrative driven comedy, so we've all probably been a little bit guilty of expecting more of characters that really were never there to service anything more than the humour of certain situations. So I think it's a bit of a and b, in that I think we would probably want overall for there to be more clearly defined arcs in terms of the narrative of the story of the series. But individual characters, I think it's fine, for example, that if you take Tiff as an example, I don't think there's any merit in that character actually having any kind of like narrative arc, because there really wouldn't be that much time and it would become sapping in terms of the amount of time required to make that work. So I get where they're coming from, and I do in some respects feel the same, but I think ultimately the way that they've approached it is probably the right way.
I think ultimately you're right that you're hampered by 6 episodes of 30 minutes in length. There's only so much story you can tell in that time, especially when you do have to also include the format and structure of the This Time programme within the episodes itself as well. So there's a certain amount of time that has to be allocated to show certain things on screen. And I think actually it's interesting, because I totally agree. I think with Tiff, it's like that character serves a purpose to an extent. I think what's more interesting is a more significant character in a series like Jenny, her engagement with Sam, that actually doesn't really lead to anything apart from, like they say in their email, a few funny scenes. But something like that, I would have thought the Jenny-Sam engagement might have a more significant part to play.
I'd also be really interested to hear from listeners whether they think there is any other comedy show that's really managed to marry a very strong story arc with a very funny program. Because it does feel like there are a lot of comedy programs where it's a battle between one or the other. You take something like, say, Feel Good, for example. I would say it's a very funny show, but that is a show that prioritizes the arc over the comedy. I would say it's more important that it's telling a story than it's really funny. Whereas you take something on the other hand, like Friday Night Dinner, where it's all about being funny, and actually they paint themselves into a corner by giving themselves too much of a story arc, because there's only so many things that can happen in that house on a Friday night. So, I'm keen to hear from listeners if anybody thinks that that's ever really been nailed, a sort of 50-50 split between great narrative arc and really funny episodes.
The only one, it's probably not the only one, but it's the one that immediately springs to mind, is those early, maybe what, series 1 to 5, I think, of Peep Show, the Mark and Sophie storyline, which goes from courting to going out to marriage to break up, like, over the course of multiple series, not just one series, obviously. But that's the only one that really kind of immediately springs to mind. And that's because they did have the luxury of multiple series to really develop that. Obviously, I don't know how many series they had from the start and whether they knew that's where it was going to go or whether it was just the natural progression. But that's the one that immediately springs to mind for me.
The only thing I would say of Peep Show is that I know for a fact one of those series was designed so that apart from the first and last episodes, the rest of the episodes could be shown in any order. So
I think that was the last series, I think.
Oh, right.
I think it was the last series. I think so.
Okay. Oh, well, then in that case, the point stands. Yeah, those early series, they were going somewhere with it then. Okay.
Yeah, and I was thinking of something maybe like Spaced as well, in that it has, it's sort of driving towards an end point. But, you know, those episodes individually stand up as funny and you can come to them without any kind of context. But there is an overarching kind of story that goes alongside that builds to something bigger than just the sum of the individual episodes.
Now, we love a callback, and Paul Williams clearly does as well. So he was watching, rewatching, this time Series 1, Episode 5. And he says that Alan makes a reference to Lynn smelling like stuffing. So that joke in the cocktail tasting in Series 2, where Alan is sniffing the drink and saying he can smell stuffing right as Lynn approaches, was a callback. Now, I must admit, that's not something that I think any of us noticed as being a callback. So, Paul, great spot.
Well done. Friend of the show, Dean Tonner's been in touch as well, saying, re-cue cards. Are you guys blind? Suddenly less of a friend of the show, Dean. There's multiple occasions throughout both series where characters, especially Alan and Simon, are clearly reading from off screen. So what do we think about this one?
Well,
I have to admit, I haven't noticed this at all. Even when it was pointed out as happening in series two, I was still unsure whether they were doing it. So maybe it's just I'm not very good at spotting that kind of thing. I genuinely haven't noticed at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure I really massively agree, because I think we looked at the scene with Coogan and Matt Smith, and I just feel like they're looking around the studio as a way to react to what each other's saying to the characters.
Yeah.
But I did think it is worth noting, of course. So what we do know is, with this time, they did use a genuine auto cue on set for the script, which is obviously massively unusual to do for a sitcom. Partly because the rewriting was down to the wire, but also I guess it does help it make it feel more like a one show or whatever. So I did wonder as well, is that what people are noticing? Because obviously then you would see Alan and Jenny at the very least, actually they are reading from an auto cue. But again, I don't think it's noticeable personally. So it's a debate that's going to rumble on potentially.
Yeah, and I feel like it's trying to understand what is the conceit of them pretending to be on a show like, you know, the one show, versus the genuine need for a cue card. So to some degree, we may never know the answer to that one, Dean.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But something we might have an answer on is just coming in from Benji82 on Twitter. So Benji wrote to us about the what we're calling the Putney joke from this time series 2. Benji writes, "You guys still don't get the Putney joke. I may be missing something, but isn't the joke simply that there would have been no need to hide the girls in a basement anywhere in the UK? They weren't in Germany and didn't need hiding. So this guy was up to no good." And I've read that, thought about it, and Benji, Yeah, I think you're bang right. Arguably, anybody that is sheltering six Jewish women in a basement in Putney, England, probably isn't doing it because of Nazis. The basement owner is being bad and wrong. And I would say, yeah, looking at this now, I'm kind of astonished that we didn't really get the jokes. But I feel like you kind of get stuck in a cycle sometimes when you're trying to dissect things off the on the fly like this, where we almost end up looking for a more complicated level to a joke than is needed sometimes.
I think it was the specificity of Putney that threw us, basically. It's like, oh, there must be some significant... They could have chosen any location. They could have chosen anywhere. Why did they choose Putney? There must be a reason.
And that's the thing. I think sometimes we're digging into the script in quite minute detail, looking for stuff that just simply isn't there. So, I think Benji's nailed exactly what the joke is, yeah.
If we weren't doing that, we'd be doing ourselves and our listeners a disservice.
We do this all for you.
But if that is the joke, I would also say...
Oh, we're still going, are we?
Yeah. Let me dig more into this. If that is the joke, I would still say as well, that joke in the grand context of all the other jokes is not that great as well. I think it's also that if that's the gag, I was looking for something funnier than that, because I don't think that's that funny.
I also think there is a problem, and it's a good problem to have, that the layering of the jokes and the pace of the jokes, they do come quite thick and fast in this time. And particularly, I think this is in a Digiwall sequence where there's always a lot of banter between Alan and Simon, let alone the interaction with what the viewers are sending into the show. So I think sometimes you're still thinking about a gag that's just landed when the next one's come in. And I think that's kind of, we've got thrown off the scent a little bit. But I think Benji's got it right.
Well, let's see if James Everard has got it right. Because he wrote via email to say, Steve Coogan escaped a six-month ban in 2019 by stating in court that he was due to film a travelogue for the BBC in character as Alan. I'm not sure if the show was this time or another show that hasn't appeared yet, or a spurious effort to escape a driving ban. Oh dear. It occurred to me that a great concept for an Alan series would be that he was contracted to the BBC to deliver a travelogue series, but that he'd had his driving licence revoked. Therefore, he'd have to pay Simon and Lynn to drive him around the country. There could be a lot of comedic potential in having Alan in the passenger seat. And for convoluted reasons, he could have to do some of the travelling via public transport. This could involve altercations with the public or having the wrong tickets, leading to heated phone conversations with Lynn. He could miss connections and have to spend time in provincial British towns. He could form an unlikely friendship with a train conductor and go back to his house in Scarborough. He could travel to Hampstead to meet Bill Oddie, but due to a miscommunication, Oddie has travelled to Norwich. Alan could then spend a day being infuriated by London and all of the things that he finds upsetting about the place. I mean, I don't know what we all think about that, but that does sound very good. What I was thinking as I read that was that we did obviously have Nomad, which was something of a travel log, where you get some of these things to some degree covered. But I would also be very happy to see him being travelled around the UK, staying in provincial British towns with Simon and Lynn.
I genuinely think that James has come up with the best, most fully formed, most likely Partridge vehicle of anything we've heard since we started Monkey Tennis, including a lot of the ideas we've come up with ourselves. You can see this working. It doesn't feel too obvious. It's a great way of including a lot of characters we love without it being too contrived. And it does have so many options. You know, like he says, if you want to go down the kind of the more vintage Partridge route, then you can have this sort of Bill Oddie miscommunication. Or if you want to kind of bring it bang up to date, then you can find some other way around it. I think it's an idea rich with possibility.
So I think in summary, that's a commission. Jed, please ring the bell.
In fact, I think we should go one better than that. I think we should give James a very special prize for essentially the best communication of the day. Let's award him this.
A mile of the evening.
That is true, but I think the biggest question that needs answering off the back of James's email is, has Steve pulled the wool over the courts of Britain? He did escape a driving ban, and we haven't got to the bottom of why.
Yeah, that is the big question, isn't it?
And next we have another friend of the show, Michael, or HorwichBloke19, as he is on Twitter. And he wrote in to say that I've been watching I'm Alan Partridge Series 1 for the millionth time. It still bothers me that Alan offers Lynn a lift to the cab rank after the traffic cone incident, despite being over the limit and being paranoid about being done for drink driving. It's a fair point. I don't think Alan would risk a driving ban. Obviously,
Keegan wouldn't.
After... Okay. Yes, no, you're right, you wouldn't. But what I will also say is that maybe at this point he's sobered up a bit. He's gone through the intense experience with the police officer. It's been quite a traumatic evening, and that can kind of sometimes kind of sober you up and take you out of that that booze fog. So maybe he just sobered up a bit.
Time for some crossover fun now. Matthew Ellis got in touch to say, while rewatching this time series one, I noticed that in the last episode, the police officer who arrests Partridge is none other than DS Ian Buckles from the murder investigation team in Line of Duty. So perhaps AC-12 exists in the Partridge-verse. At any rate, he's played by Nigel Boyle, who also plays Buckles, and that's close enough for me. Perhaps Lynn is H. Well, I would say, Matthew, that Lynn follows the Bible to the letter of the law. The letter. And also, she's interested in one thing and one thing only, and that's catching big cardies. So it's possible.
And sorry, guys, quick question. What is the letter of the law?
J?
Correct. That's the correct answer. Okay, I think it's time for our last email of today's show before we get into the obligatory bank holiday fun. So this is quite a lengthy email from James Coughlin titled Feedback and Musings. Okay, sit back, strap in. It's a long one. James writes, thank you and very thank you for the podcast. It's a good start. Discovered you guys at the start of lockdown and working through hours of your content has been a brilliant distraction during these very black times. I wanted to share some thoughts on all your content. Obviously, as I'm commenting on the entire series, a lot of this isn't going to be exactly current, but I've got to get it off my chest. So we're going in point one of three here, this time series one, regarding the Yellow Lotus Esprit that we see on the Digiwall. James writes, what you may have missed is the added relevance of this particular model. The Esprit Series 1 was the same one used by Roger Moore in The Spy Who Loved Me. So Alan's worship of Roger, coupled with the collection of photos on his iPad, linked right back to Kim Kiwap and later onto the caravan. Also, in a further blurring of the lines between Alan and Coogan, I think you will find that the actual yellow Esprit pictured is part of Steve's personal car collection. I mean, I guess we can't verify that, but it's a good tidbit if it is.
I think that is an unbelievably good spot. I think you need a very broad knowledge of quite, you know, well, actually not broad knowledge. You need quite a specific knowledge of quite a few things here that I think, you know, are, I mean, I think we've talked about Bond in the past that the old ones are a bit like they haven't aged particularly well. And I'm not a huge fan of the sort of older Bonds, but yeah, obviously with Alan being such a fan, that is a great little detail of a through line from Partridge old to Partridge new.
Yeah. Second point of three, Alpha Papa. James writes, in Alpha Papa, we see Lynn driving her beige Metro. Fast forward to From the Oast House, and in the final Ambush episode, Lynn is parked opposite Alan in a beige Maestro, the next model up in the now-defunct Austin Rover range. His question is, has Lynn had an upgrade, or did the writers make a mistake? Knowing their attention to detail, and that Steve is a proper petrol head, I wonder if it was deliberate. The colour makes me think it's meant to be the same car. I mean, again... incredible level of detail to spot these things, right?
A great spot.
It sounds, yeah.
I suspect that what's happened here is that they would have kept it Metro if they could, but as he says, the range is defunct, and perhaps they just couldn't find a serviceable Metro that they could use in the later series. And so I think...
This is from the Oast House, remember?
Yeah, so it's just, a theatre of the mind, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
I would maybe scrap that point, Adam.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Well, it's impressive because a lot of this information is quite detailed car knowledge, and he's kind of covering off both ends of the spectrum with the supercars of the Lotus Esprit range and then the super crap cars of the Austin.
Sorry, so is that
Rover
supercars
range?
And super crap cars? Those are the ends. Yeah, right.
He's got them both.
Supercars! Super talk!
Brought to you by Ginster's Pasties.
All right, and then lastly from James's lengthy email, this is Mid-Morning Matters, Series 2, Episode 5. James writes, I know that spotting continuity errors in Mid Morning Matters is like shooting fish in a barrel. So we accept that multiple takes and editing to tighten it means that incorrect hand, head and body positions are often noticeable between shots. However, the massage episode was clearly shot over different days, even though Alan tells us he is having his massage later in that programme. When Alan is sat at the console, he is wearing a black-faced wristwatch. Cut him lying on the treatment table, and his watch now has a white face. Steve obviously picked a different watch up off the dressing table when he left the house that day. Now, what I will say here is for James's third point, I'm not sure that's necessarily how it works. Like normally with a TV show, you have a props department that would issue characters with their props for being on screen. So, for example, something like EastEnders, they literally have a props cupboard where each character has whatever their watch is, their mobile phone, their wallets, their rings, every kind of small prop item that a character would have, they're kind of allocated to characters almost like they're real people. So I'd be very surprised if it's just Steve wearing his own watch whilst he's being Alan, particularly because Alan obviously dresses and has style in a certain way, which isn't necessarily reflective of Coogan's. But equally, potentially, Mid Morning Matters was done on quite a small budget. Maybe they didn't have that level of production. So it could be that, but it's probably not that.
I was just thinking, that reminds me of, I think it's one of the outtakes that I've mentioned previously on the pod,
socks,
where
yeah.
Alan's, where the socks, yeah, where Steve's got his feet up on the desk and he's just like, can we get some new socks? These aren't very Alan socks. So I was wondering if those maybe had been his socks that he was wearing that day. It's just like, oh, they're just a pair of socks, like I'll put the rest of the clothes on. And then obviously him looking at them going, actually, you know what, those aren't very Alan socks, I need to get them changed. So I wonder if it was similar
right.
to that.
So,
it was
okay,
watch,
so
like it was
we need to figure
socks.
Out, was the black-faced wristwatch Steve's or Alan's, or was it the white? Yeah, which watch is which?
Which watch is which?
Yeah, sounds like a Mid Morning Matters phone in.
Our new regular feature, which watch is which?
Today we're asking, which watch is which?
Which watch is which?
Oh, and on that bombshell, Adam, I think, is it time for bank holidays?
It certainly is. So one thing that is always constant amongst the feedback is suggestions from you, inspired by Alan's phone-in in I'm Alan Partridge, of it's bank holiday, what you doing, who's with you? It's people's dream, well, I say dream, it's people's mid-range celebrity fantasies for a bank holiday, and I will tip things off, and then I think we'll go around the room. So, David Boxall says he'd like to defrost the freezer with the cast of Hollyoaks. Any of them that wanted an extra fun trip could pop to the recycling centre with some empty pesto jars. Magic.
Patrick Baines says chutney making with Clive Mirry on a nice barge. Then later, we'd pop into a delicatessen to top up on cheese and bread, then have a lovely picnic at a motorway service station. Goodbye.
Lord Tweetsbury of Twittington upon Tweet writes, open top canoeing with Dave Benson Phillips in the Wye Valley, followed by a round of golden ales, complemented with some savoury snacks at a local but reputable pub.
Madame Swish 90 would like to go ice skating with Nigel Farage, then for a spot of tea at Chester Services with Alison Hammond.
Luntman says Dame Kelly Holmes can pop with me to Pets at Home to browse the small rodent section and then help me load up the car with Felix. I'll drop her at the cab rank and then help Ainsley Harriet do the audit of his VHS collection as promised.
Gary Armstrong would like to go to the Lightwater Valley with Sting and stop off for a Filet-O-Fish and McFlurry from McDonald's.
Adrian Barrister writes, balcony seats at a Morrissey concert with Delia Smith and Ian Duncan Smith. Yes, must give the Smiths a call.
Peter Fitzsimmons says, browsing strimmers at B&Q with Adrian Childs. Drive through KFC on the way home. Just a quick note that that was posted on Twitter, and KFC Island did reply to that tweet saying, AKA, living the dream. Brilliant.
Benji82 writes, a ramble with Pat Sharp, then round to the twins for Twister and pork pies.
Stephen Warne is keen on a ploughman's lunch at the Cooper's Mill in Yeovil with Diane Udale.
Stephen Reeve writes, paintballing with Dame Judy Dench, followed by a couple's massage to soothe those aching muscles. She's very competitive.
Dougie Dark, Nought, says, clubbing with Gove, bye.
Mark McCafferty says, Botox treatment with shouty chef Gordon Ramsay, followed by a beef Wellington lunch at his place, all washed down with a big fat shot of his wife's homemade slow gin.
Sarah's off to a car boot sale with Sir Ian McKellen, followed by a Toby Carvery.
And lastly, Dean Todder, who writes, carp fishing with Rylan, then stopping off at McFlurry's on the way home.
So thank you so much to everybody who joined us on our fantasy bank holiday there. And thanks to all of you that have provided us with feedback. So much, in fact, that we'll be back again soon with another feedback episode before we dive into our very exciting series of interviews with notable fans of Partridge. If you've got feedback for us, either about our own show or about the world of Partridge or Alan's shows, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, Twitter @thepartridgepod, Instagram @monkeytennispod. The Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017, or you can chuck us a couple of pennies just to say thanks at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. So until next time, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I think I genuinely would like to go carp fishing with Ryland.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha! Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Bam!
Monkey tennis?
Little piece, my foot on a spike.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzer of a guy.
Yes, 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 and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.